भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 13 द हंसावतार आंसर्स क्वेश्चंस टेक्स्ट 2। श्री भगवान उवाच सॉरी टेक्स्ट 1। श्री भगवान उवाच सत्वं रजस तम इति गुणा बुद्धे न चात्मनः सत्वे नान्यत्तमो हन्या सत्वं सत्वेन चैव हि। श्री भगवान उवाच सत्वं रजस्तमैति गुणा बुद्धेर्न चात्मनः सत्वेनान्यत्तमो हन्या सत्वं सत्वेन चैव हि। सत्वं श्री भगवान उवाच सत्वं रजस्तमैति गुणा बुद्धेर्न चात्मनः सत्वेनान्यत्तमो हन्या सत्वं सत्वेन चैव हि। श्री भगवान उवाच सत्वं रजस्तमैति गुणा बुद्धेर्न चात्मनः सत्वेनान्यत्तमो हन्या सत्वं सत्वेन चैव हि। श्री भगवान उवाच सत्वं रजस्तमैति गुणा बुद्धेर्न चात्मनः सत्वेनान्यत्तमो हन्या सत्वं सत्वेन चैव हि। श्रीभगवान् उवाच सत्वं रजस्तमैति सत्वं रजस्तमैति गुणा बुद्धेर्न चात्मनः माधुरीस्। श्री भगवान उवाच सत्वं रजस्तमैति सत्वेन चैव हि। श्री भगवान उवाच द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड सेड सत्वम गुडनेस रजः पैशन तमः इग्नोरेंस इति दस नोन गुणाः द मोड्स ऑफ मटेरियल नेचर बुद्धेः पर्टेन टू मटीरियल इंटेलिजेंस न नॉट च आल्सो आत्मनः टू द सोल सत्वेन बाय द मटीरियल मोड ऑफ गुडनेस Anyatamo. The two, the other two, passion and ignorance. Anyat may be destroyed. Sattvam, the material mode of goodness. Sattvena, by purified goodness. Cha, also, may be destroyed. Eva, certainly. He, indeed. Translation in purport by the disciples of His Divine Days, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion and ignorance, pertain to material intelligence and not to the spirit soul. By development of material goodness, one can conquer the modes of passion and ignorance. And by cultivation of transcendental goodness, one may free oneself even from material goodness. Purport. Goodness in the material world never exists in pure form. Therefore, it is common knowledge that on the material platform, no one is working without personal motivation. In the material world, goodness is always mixed with some amount of passion and ignorance, whereas spiritual or purified goodness represents the liberated platform of perfection, Vishuddha Sattva. Materially, one is proud to be an honest, compassionate man, but unless one is fully Krishna conscious, one will speak truths that are not ultimately significant, and one will give mercy that is ultimately useless. Because the onward march of material time removes all situations and persons from the material stage, our so-called mercy and truth apply to situations that shortly will not exist. Real truth is eternal, and real mercy means to situate people in eternal truth. Still, for an ordinary person, cultivation of material goodness may be a preliminary stage on the road to Krishna consciousness. For example, it is stated in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that one who is addicted to meat eating cannot understand the pastimes of Lord Krishna. By cultivation of material mode of goodness, however, one may become a vegetarian and perhaps come to appreciate the sublime process of Krishna consciousness. Since it is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita that the material mode of nature constantly rotate, one must take advantage of an elevated position in material goodness to step onto the transcendental platform. Otherwise, as the wheel of time turns, one will again go in darkness of material ignorance. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patitanama Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे सर्वशास्त्राब्धि पीयूषः सर्ववैदेहिक सत्फल सर्वसिद्धांत रत्नाढ्य सर्वलोकैक दृक्पद सर्वभागवत प्राण श्रीमद्भागवत प्रभो कलिध्वान्तोदितादित्य श्रीकृष्ण परिवर्तित परमानंद पाठाय प्रेमवर्ष अक्षराय ते सर्वदा सर्वसेव्याय श्रीकृष्णाय नमोस्तुते मदेकबंधो मत्संगी मन्गुरो मन्महाधना मद निस्तारक मद भाग्य मदानंदो नमोस्तुते असाधु साधुतादायी नति निचिच्चो तारक हानुमुंच कदाचिन मां प्रेमनरित कंठयो स्फुर मुकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यद कृपा तमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनधारिणं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं परमानंद माधवम् Hare Krishna. Let me welcome all the devotees assembled for the morning Bhagavatam class. Today is a very auspicious day on which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in 1838, the Shukla Trayodashi of Bhadra. And the verse today also is very, very interesting, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is giving a very, very pertinent instruction as to how to come out from the material mindset. Please excuse my voice. The material modes are very amazingly called as guna or mode. A quality, and we are in this world very, very continuously affected, or rather pinched by each mode every time, sometimes a mixture, sometimes singular. And just as we boil, you know, if we take three sabjis and we boil them together, and how as the boil in the sabji comes, different vegetables come up. Similarly, we ourselves are very much tainted by the different qualities at all the time. And these qualities are very much habituating, where we get very much used to a particular mode. But every mode has its effects. And because of the mode of somebody in the mode of ignorance and somebody in the mode of passion has to suffer accordingly as his activities are. Although being habituated, if one comes to the realization of transcending these modes, Lord Krishna is advising that these modes are only on the level of intelligence, nothing to do with the soul. A very, very solacing statement. You know, every morning when we get up, the kind of thoughts we get and the kind of mood swings we go into, when we hear this, we feel a little solaced that, okay, there is a chance that, you know, something in the existence is still pure. It is just covered by the modes through intelligence. So here, when one accepts the habits of modes of goodness, slowly, slowly one comes up to the mode of goodness. But staying in the modes of goodness is also very dangerous. As explained by the acharyas here, that everything in this material world is permanent, is temporary, and the only thing that permanent is change. So this material mode of goodness that you are in, that might also change according to the changing circumstance. I remember when I started coming to temple, getting influenced by the philosophy, I went to meet one of the friend acquaintances and had a kind of debate with his father on eating non-veg. So I could see that that person was so calm, that person was so sweet in speaking, but very much attached to the non-vegetarian diet. And here he is saying, you know, why are you getting excited? You know, Krishna doesn't tell anybody to get excited. We should be calm. You know, I'm eating non-veg just like a sabji. You know, there is no ill intention in my heart. I was wondering, you know, the mode of goodness, you know, that the shadow of the mode of goodness also, you know, if you feel everything is good, everything is fine. When somebody feels he knows everything, nobody can teach him anything. But very soon, as the circumstances will change, one will be again stooped down because of his experiences to the mode of passion and mode of ignorance. Therefore, when somebody comes to the mode of goodness, he has to transcend that by taking shelter of the transcendental practices of devotional service, which will situate you in the Vishuddha Sattva, thus guaranteeing that you will not come back and become the victim of mode of goodness. As described in the Nectar of Instruction, Satovritti, whatever the sadhus follow, one has to do that so that one develops the mode of goodness. Because one who is habituated to the modes of ignorance and modes of passion and habits related to that, for him, spiritual knowledge becomes the most difficult to understand. That's why, as many of us have tried, speaking to our acquaintances, our colleagues at work, or our family members, it becomes very difficult for them to even apprehend. You know, after many years of practice in Krishna consciousness, when we see that now our family is taking up to the process of Krishna consciousness, when we reflect back, we see a thick kind of ignorance which covered the family, and they could not even comprehend why somebody would leave even onion and garlic. Slowly, slowly it sets in, and the major instrument in removing that setting or removing that covering is the Lord's prasad, right? Many of us have been attracted to the, and are still attracted to the prasad of the Lord, who slowly, slowly helps us, and a chemical reaction happens by which the ignorance in the intelligence slowly, slowly dissipates, and the spiritual wisdom makes some sense. Slowly, slowly, but surely. And slowly we start to understand what the absolute truth is to the pages of Bhagavad Gita. I have a friend, an acquaintance, who used to always boast that he has read Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita 18 times. And he used to tell me, "Tu kitni bar padha hai?" And I had hardly even read half. But he said, "18 bar padha hai maine, 18 bar." I said, "Wow, self-realized soul." But from his actions, there was nothing even close to what a self-realized soul was. That, in fact, that instance made me inquire into what a self-realized soul's activities are. So, okay, he tells he has read 18 times. Let me find out what exactly a self-realized soul is supposed to do. And then we had one person who also claimed that I am self-realized soul. You know, and he belonged to a particular cult. But then who, again, after some time started networking very nicely with the devotees, started staying at their homes. And when we later, he came to know that he just came to temple to watch the temple and put temple in a very insecure position. He was shocked. You know, a self-realized soul coming with a, to do harm to a spiritual holy place. So all these activities, unless one takes to the transcendental practices, it will not be very easy for a person to come out of illusion. And the most benefactory activity that anybody can do, the first level is benefit to the body, second is benefit to the mind, and third is the benefit to the soul. And the maximum benefit that anybody can give to any living entity is through doing an activity by which his soul will be blessed. And today, the divine appearance of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the one who gave the utmost benefit, probably because of which we are here, relishing the holy name, relishing the Srimad Bhagavatam and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I am very, very grateful to the authorities for giving me this chance of speaking on this holy day, by which I am myself very much benefited by reading the biography of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and my appreciation for this divine soul has increased millionfold. A very amazing story, not like a fairy tale, that a poor pure devotee is born with, you know, very clear understanding of the Bhagavad philosophy. It's very nice to hear a story of a pure soul and how he takes up to Krishna consciousness very easily and, you know, grows into it. Story of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is amazing. Full of trials and tribulations. Full of story of determination. And amidst what? Just as the Lord descends, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaturshkritam. Similarly, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born at the junction when the whole society was the most precarious situation. The Britishers had very nicely and systematically convinced the entire Indian population of the inefficacy of the Vedas, of the inefficacy of the Hindu rituals, of idol worship, considering the Puranas and the Itihasas as just a fairy tale, a folk tale, calling it as mythology, which unfortunately still remains. And on that, they were propagating the Western philosophy and encouraging, you know, the best way to stop something is stop the production and increase the production of something which will influence them more. So with the Christian missionary schools and the education in that regard and discouraging any Vedic publication, everywhere it was a chaos on the Vedic front where the new generation was not ready to accept the Vedic theology. But till that time, we've heard of the renaissance of Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, where he also upheld the scriptures of Gaudiya and again brought the glory of Gaudiya Vaishnavism back. But as the theory of entropy, you know, where the things water down and things get spoiled in time, At the time of the birth of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 1938, there was a prevalent practice of Sahajism in Bengal. And all that was more spread because of this deviated sects of Bharatalas who, giving it a commercial look, started spreading books on the practices of Sahajism. Sahajism is, in essence, a practice where rules and regulations are kept aside and only the person very impersonally enjoys the facilities of being Krishna. And in all sentiment, when there is no understanding of the Siddhanta, but just getting carried away by the emotional and sentimental wave. So they started spreading all the books, because of which everywhere the Sahajya sect and the Jati Gosai sect was very much prevalent. So 1938, in the beautiful dynasty of Krishnananda Datta, this Krishnananda Datta was Raja Krishnananda Datta, who was a devout devotee of Nityananda Prabhu, contemporary with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was staying at Sri Rampur. And at Birnagar, at Sri Rampur, and there he was given this beautiful deities of Radha Madhav. Very interestingly, we chant this beautiful prayers of Jai Radha Madhav every day. It is a beautiful scenery. Srila Prabhupada dedicated his one whole entire lecture describing the different aspects of Vrindavan that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned. Just recently, I heard that all these names of Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Janavallava Girivardhari, they were in fact the most favorite deities of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Radha Madhav from his paternal grandfather, and Girivardhari from his father was a Govardhan Shila. So he, you know, is a transcendental poetry where he is also glorifying the Lord and his activities. At the same time, he is mentioning the names of his favorite deities. So after Krishnananda Datta, actually, the king of Adishur, he called four Kayastha to the kingdom to spread the holy name. And one of them was Purushottam Datta, whose seventh and eighth generation were Vinayak and Narayana Datta. Now, we might think that just names of these personalities are might not be of much use, but Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions that even hearing about the names of the associates of Chaitanya, of Lord Chaitanya, one can get the love of God if that proper attitude is there. So after Vinayak and Narayan Datta, Radha Krishnananda, Raja Krishnananda Datta was born as a grandson, and whose grandson Govinda Sharana, who developed a beautiful area called as Govindpura in Bengal, which later was joined by Britishers, the Kali Ghat and the Sutanoti and Govindpura, all this combined became Calcutta. Then Govind Sharan's grandson was Ramachandra Datta, whose grandson was Madan Mohan Datta. Can you imagine, you know? It's a legacy of grandsons. And Madan Mohan Datta was the one whose grandson was Raja Vallabh Datta. Now this Madan Mohan Datta was very, very devotional, and he was the one who donated a lot to the municipality of Calcutta. Till today there is a pukur or a lake called as Hetua. You can imagine, donated a lake. They were such big kings. And then he built these 395 steps at the Preta Sthali Tirtha at Gaya. You know, one wants to go and see the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu in Gaya. These steps were built by Madan Mohan Datta. To Madan Mohan Datta was born Ramatanu Datta. To Ramatanu Datta was born Raja Vallabh Datta, who was again a king of his own time. And to Raja Vallabh Datta was born Ananda Chandra Datta, and he was the father of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Ananda Chandra Datta was very well informed, very well in his devotional qualification, very handsome looking. In fact, people used to say that nobody is as handsome as Ananda Chandra Datta. Very well built, and we'll hear about how he passed away in a very mystical way. And his wife was Jagan Mohini Devi. Jagan Mohini Devi again was a devout Vaishnavi who was again a daughter of a zamindar from Ula district in Bir Nagar, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in fact born in Nadia. Now as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, as I mentioned, he began his journey as an inquisitive scholar. At the age of 2, extremely talented, since his childhood, he started writing poems. And his poem always had beautiful mood of love of God and flavors of devotional sentiment. Always at age of six, he had heard the entire Ramayana and Mahabharata. Wherever there was satsanga, he used to go and sit there and learn. At 9, he started he started reading astrological texts and mastered them. You know, the pranam mantra of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, can we repeat? Namo bhakti vinodaya. Namo bhakti vinodaya. Sachidananda namine. Sachidananda namine. Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. Rupanugavarayate. Rupanugavarayate. Shri Bhaktivinoda Thakur, also called as Sachidananda Bhaktivinod, he was enthused with Gaura Shakti, and that we see from his childhood, where he had this amazing knack of asking questions, inquiring, you know, going to every sect, every religion, and asking questions, finding out who is supreme. You know, it's really amazing to read how he, and somehow or other, you know, the biography is too big, and I was just very desperate to find out, when did that devotional touch come? Where was he? So when that point came, I was so happy, and it was after a long time. But till that time, still Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he displayed devotional sentiment, sometimes even impersonal sentiments. And then at 10th, at the age of 10, he started inquiring spiritual truths. Since childhood, he was very sweet in his talk, very much caregiving, very, very respectful towards others. In school, somehow, he had very, very bad teachers. You know, it's very, very something like a child abuse case, you know, but this teacher was so tyrannical that anybody who came to class used to get punishment. The person who came first will get one, you know, whack. He came second, get second whack. So imagine the person who comes last, how many whacks he'll get. But somehow that because of the complaints by the parents, he was removed. And I was amazed by the accounts given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur about what happened in his school. You know, what sharp memory. You know, if I tell you to, you know, repeat an entire day in the past week, might be difficult for us. But here his biography, at what age he's writing. So amazingly, he remembers everything, what he did, what he spoke. You know, this shows that he's not a baddha or a conditioned living entity. He used to go and watch different people experimenting with God's divinity. There was a brahmachari in his near his house who used to worship skulls. Brahmachari in the sense, he was just a celibate. To worship skulls. And he said, whoever offers water and milk to the skull will laugh. So he went and offered the milk and saw, not laughing. No, there is no God. You know, I'm not experiencing anything. Then he went to an old carpenter who used to paint. You know, Durga Puja will be very soon coming. Who used to paint the different murtis of Durga. And he said, when will the God actually come? Will actually enter this murti? So this old carpenter said, you know, the moment I paint the eyes, the actual life will come. And in fact, you know, if you ask any painter, he will say that, yes, you know, a painting, you know, wherever painting you'll see some life in the eye. And that life makes the entire painting come live, you know. So he waited till the day, you know, because there was a lot of work. There was a grass structure evolved. Then he went and he covered it with proper clay. And then the paint started. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was waiting. He was named as Kedarnath, you know, on the holy shrine of Kedarnath, the Jyotirlinga. So here, Kedarnath Datta was waiting. When will the eyes be painted? And he said, eyes painting ho gaya. He said, I can't see any divine signs. Can imagine a very inquisitive child trying to find out who is God and how does God appear. So here he's seeing the eyes are painted. So then the old carpenter said, actually, the Brahmanas will do the installation process and then the Lord will appear. And then Durga will appear in this deity. So okay. Let me wait for that day then. So then the Brahmanas came and they did the puja and he still felt, I don't see any sign of divinity. So he went again to the old carpenter and said, you know, you seem to make some sense in your talk. Can you please tell me what exactly is the process of divinity? Sir, actually, this Brahmanas fool, you know, there is nothing called as consecration. Actually, the biggest thing that is Parameshwara, the Paramatma in heart. We should worship him. And from there, he got the idea that, you know, okay, if there is some level of divinity, that is the Parameshwara in heart. Then he met a sipoy, what do you call? A sipoy whose name was Golam Khan, and he gave him such an, you know, fairy tale story of evolution, and he said, you know, that how the supreme name, the holy name, will save us. He said, oh really? So then he's asking question to that sipoy, you know,
What about the name of Lord Ram? You can imagine him asking, you know, then what do you think Ram is? And he said, yeah, Ram and Rahim are one. The holy name of Ram can save you. And he was startled. He said, really? He said, yes. If any ghost troubles you, just chant the holy name of Ram. And he started trying that. And, you know, because the villages, many times there were some places which were abandoned. And because being abandoned, were always haunted by ghosts. And it was his favorite activity to go to that place and chant the holy names of Ram. And see that the place is, you know, without any influence of ghosts. Very amazingly. Then he met different of his uncles, his mother's side uncles, her brothers, who were very much influenced by Ram Mohan Roy, who was into the Brahma Samaj, where the nitty-gritties of Vedas were declined, but a covered version of Christianity was introduced. So here, all his uncles, he gives the name of the uncles, Raghu, Nashu, and Parashuram Mustafi. No, actually it's not Mustafi, but it's Mushtaufi. You know, it's a Bengali surname. So all of them were so much steeped into the atheistic philosophy that it somehow he felt very, very uncomfortable by their conclusions. So he kept seeking. And their conclusion was that nature is the greatest God. Finally, at 11, his father died. And there began a series of calamity. If you read the biography, the mention of fever and cholera is so rampant that you wonder how did, you know, people survive. And he himself, he suffered through so many ailments, one after another, that it was very shocking, you know, that a Nitya Siddha going through so many calamities and physical ailments, which shows that, you know, anybody who comes to this world is not, you know, spared. Everybody has to go through what is ordained. And at age of 12, he was married to a 5-year-old girl at Ranaghat. And he calls this as a doll's play, you know, Gudiyo ki Shadi. As he became elder, he got very much affiliated with Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar, to whom once, as he was, you know, receiving his knowledge on Sanskrit, he said that, you know, we have not seen God, so let us not talk about God. And to that, although being student, in a very humble way, he said that you have mentioned in so many of your books that God is formless. So if you have not seen God, how can you mention him to be formless? And if God is all powerful, why can't he have the power of having a form? To that, Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar was very much impressed. In 1856, he came to a university in Kolkata, where Satyendranath Tagore and Gajendranath Tagore, Ganendranath Tagore, who was the brother of Rabindranath Tagore, were his classmates, where because of his amazing mastery over English, no, yet he has not come to the full level of Krishna consciousness. Here just little spiritual knowledge is contained. There, Principal Clint, Reverend Duff, George Thompson, and Keshav Chandra Sen, they all were very much enthralled when they saw that he has mastered so much over English and literature. So much so that they started publishing his poems. Now, this is 56. So how many years old he must be? 18? 38 to 56, right? 18 years old. You can imagine, in the British Raj, English poems by an Indian. And here, he started spreading about spiritual consciousness, about the soul. He started giving lectures on the evolution of matter to the British India Society. He started studying, you know, to refute. He started studying the Brahma Dharma. He started studying Christianity. He started studying Quran and mastered. He also knew Urdu and Persian. In 1858, his grandfather, Krishna Vallabha or Raja Vallabha, paternal grandfather, was about to pass away. One astrologer had told that very soon your entire village is going to be, you know, eradicated by a epidemic. And he saw that, you know, as he was moving from different posts. He first started doing a clerical job. Then he gave a law examination. He passed it. And there, he started working as a deputy magistrate. And slowly, he said, at age of 27, you'll come to the highest position you'll ever get in your life. And from there, you'll exceed in that position. Till that time, he kept trying. So he became a teacher, a principal, and then a magistrate. And then, in 1858, as he came to visit his grandfather who was passing by, that grandfather told him that very soon you will become the greatest of Vaishnavas. And he said, I'm going to pass away very soon. And to the proper time, his grandfather passed away, where his life airs passed down from the top of his head. And he proclaimed that you will be the greatest Vaishnava. Then, Kedarnath, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he took a transfer to Puri. You know, somehow there, he made sure that, because his grandfather wanted him to visit all the holy places in Orissa, so he took transfers according to where he wanted to go and started visiting the temples. And his 5 years in Puri were the triumphant years of his achievement and contribution, where he exposed bogus gurus, he put systems in the Puri temple, so much so that at a point of time he even punished the greatest positions in Puri. Not only that, he wrote so many different books. He started Bhagavatam Discourses. Now from 1869 to 1874, he stayed in Puri. And in 1860, he got the touch of Krishna consciousness and touch of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. And here in 1874 was his fourth son, that is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Because he wanted his mission to go, he prayed that let a ray of Vishnu come. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was born, who helped him so much to spread the movement. So not only he wrote many books, he took up the task of exposing the bogus gurus at the risk of losing his life with the entire family's life. In the story of Bhishikshen, the amazing statement when he is afflicted with high fever and about to die, and when his wife pleads, please leave this Bhishikshen because your daughter Kumudini is dying. He said, let us all die, but this rascal has to be punished. ready to undergo anything for the spreading of the Sanatana Dharma and punishing the people under the garb who are spreading ill activities or ill fame to the Sanatana Dharma. At the end of his life, he started the Namahatta preaching program. And if you read the accounts of his preaching programs, every day, moving around with his best friend, Ram Sevak Bhakti Bringa, and another troop, and whom he used to call as the employees of the Namahatta. They used to go to every village, giving the holy name to everybody, chanting, having sankirtan, having discourse on the holy name, encouraging everybody to chant the holy name. And in 1904, he retired from his active magistrate jobs and started staying in seclusion to chant the holy names of the Lord, where he revealed the glories of the holy name through his numerous quotes, where he describes holy name to be the supreme most achievement, the supreme most instrument of achievement, and the supreme most aspiration that anybody should have. And he wrote so many different poems and at least 100 publications to his credit. So many of thousands of original Sanskrit verses and Bengali poems. You know, especially for somebody who is very, very jada buddhi, very difficult to understand the Sanskrit verses and their purport. When the same thing comes in the form of different poems. So we had Gita Mala, Gitavali, Kalyan Kalpataru, different poems, and everything given systematically. One of his beautiful books was Bhagavat Arka Marichi Mala. That is, the stotras or the shlokas of Srimad Bhagavatam very nicely characterized in the form of Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. And he very humbly mentions that this was told to him by Srila Sarupdo Damodar Goswami himself in a dream. Then he wrote so many of different books, and the most important of his, or one of the important of his contributions, was the birth site, the discovery of birth site of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Once I was in the reception seva at Mayapur, where the, you know, the person who was doing the brooming there, he just came to me, was very young, said, "You know where is the actual birth of Lord Chaitanya?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, here near Balaldigi, near, you know, the what do you call it? Not Godhram Dweep. Just nearby here." And he said, no. Actually, the birthplace of Gauranga is that side, in the Koladeep, Navadeep. No, you people don't know anything. I was wondering what to say, what to refute to this person. He is a Dhamvasi. And you are told not to fight, you know, enter into fight with Dhamvasi. But then one of the seniors came and he said, "See, we came here on the words of Srila Prabhupada, who has spread the holy name on the words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells that this is the birthplace, whom do you think we will believe? You are believing your ancestors, I will believe in my ancestors." So I was very happy. I said, "Okay, so." No, I started reading that chapter. And it is so amazing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur just could not accept that the birthplace of Mahaprabhu submerged under the sea, under the river Ganga. He again and again started finding out, and when once he was on this side of Ganga, on Rani Dharmashala, suddenly he saw a whole palace lit with lights. His son Kamala Prasad, he also saw it. But the another servant with him, he couldn't see. And then he started researching to the old maps of Chaitanya Bhagavat. And with so much beautiful research, he found out that that is the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth. And the last was, he wanted his spiritual guide, Sri Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, whom he met in 1885, to, you know, tick the whole thing, yes, you know, to endorse that, yes, Jagannath Babaji Maharaj was so old, he was hunchback, could not walk, his eyes were closed. If you had to see somebody, somebody had to lift the eyelid, so old. You know, I cannot forget, you know, once Rishikesh Anuprabhu played the role of Jagannath Babaji Maharaj in a drama. And actually, you know, when Jagannath Babaji Maharaj enters that place, which is full of tulsi groves, where his servant is carrying him on his shoulder, he jumps out of the basket and shouts loudly, "Ei Nimayar Janmastan, Ei Nimayar Janmastan." And then when everybody saw that a frail and fragile person like this is actually endorsing, and because he was also very well known as a Siddha Babaji. So from there, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Yogapit excavation started. And then he started so many organizations to sustain that temple. You know, you see, a proper plan of organizing the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and its propagation. So at the end, after reading through the beautiful biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose life and soul was preaching the holy name, we would like to conclude with the beautiful prayer on holy name, where this being the week of the holy name week, which ends with the disappearance of Srila Haridas Thakur, where we chant more, we discuss more the holy names. So just one instance where Srila Rupa Goswami, he, an amazing poet, an amazing composer of Vedic hymns, he composed a very beautiful verse where he's glorifying at how much nectar is there in these two words of Krishna, that after these words, I chant these words, I desire for more ears, I desire for more tongues. And this name Krishna is possessing my entire body and putting me into an extreme situation of exhilaration. And after hearing this verse, Srila Haridas Thakur, who was the epitome of the preaching of holy name, he spread this wonder and spoke to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as to, you know, never ever have I heard such a glory of the holy name. So we'll end with this glorification of the holy name. तुंडे तांडविनी रतिं वितनुते तुंडावली लब्धये कर्णक्रोडघ कदंबिनी घटयते कर्णार्भिदेभ्य स्पृहं चेतः प्रांगण संगिनी विजयते सर्वेन्द्रियाणां कृतिं नो जाने जनिता क्रियद्भिरमृतैर् कृष्णेति वर्णद्वयी. हरे कृष्ण. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Avirbhav Mahamahotsava ki, Nitai Gaur Premanande. All the devotees are requested that at 11 o'clock we will begin the bhajans of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur here near Srila Prabhupada's altar, and then after that we'll have Pushpanjali. Then Mahaprasad for all. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय। जिताय गौर प्रेमानंदे।